Good evening. James McKenna here with my Science Hour, July 25th, 2013. Number of topics to cover tonight, dealing once again with water. And we're going to start to phase into also the fall comet issues that are coming up, just to keep you apprised of those. First of all, listener mail that came in. This is very interesting. I'll read it, and you can determine for yourself what this means to you. But it's a very, just one of those background stories that is good to talk about. This is from a listener email. It says, "Dear Jim, you sit in a unique position in that you hear from many quarters of the globe about, well, swine flu in my quarter." In other words, he's sending in an issue about swine flu. By the way, this is from Indiana. Okay, continuing to read. It says, "FYI, no local news coverage by any Indianapolis area TV news station was last week's Hamilton County 4-H fair was as regards to the big scare of swine flu. My own children during 1993 to 96 showed hogs every year. I'm quite familiar with the fair as my nephews and grandchildren are not in that age bracket." Okay, well, anyway, he's saying that his kids for 4 years showed hogs in the fair, and so he's quite familiar with this event. Reading on, it says, "Our local fair officials did not," stress on not, "our local officials did not allow swine to be brought into the fair until 2 days before the judging. Immediately after judging, they were quietly sent home. Why? Swine flu had been reported. Not that it was found in any of the hogs at the fair. The scare was sufficient to send the youngsters and their pet swine home. Allegedly, 26 cases of swine flu had been reported in early July." More conditioning, right? "That the local news stations did not pick up on the issue is very telling. At the end of the first week in August, I will keep my eyes open and ears tuned. The Indiana State Fair starts. I will see how they handle the so-called swine problem. Pork producers in Indiana are a tight-knit group, and they did not take lightly to adverse news. Signs all over Hamilton County Fair told visitors, 'Do not allow children to pet or touch the animals.' Has your Minnesota News had any discussion about swine flu problem?" And then it's signed, and then it says, "Obviously, it all has to do with the new comet that will pass in Mars in October, or what is due to close encounter of an asteroid." And so anyway, he's just making some guesses as to possible causes of this. But anyway, the end result is that there was a swine flu scare at this county fair, the Hamilton County Fair in Indiana, and it never hit the news. It was never broadcast on the news, but it was a very hush-hush thing done in the background. And so this is very strange. Anyway, what we're going to look for now, there's more county fairs coming up during this summer, and all of the state fairs are about to begin. So we're going to see how they manage, how they handle this swine flu, so-called swine flu issue that they're talking about here. It all just seems very strange. Things that should have happened didn't happen. Things that happened should not have happened. Anyway, we're just going to keep an eye on this. So if you out there get any inkling of kind of a false flag scare with swine flu at your state or county fairs, please let me know, because this is a story I'd like to follow. Okay, enough of that. First of all, with just a little sun and hurricane report. The hurricane season this year is extremely weak.
The hurricane season this year is extremely weak, and also the solar cycle. The report came out just this past week that we have maxed out. We're in mid-2013, And remember that our solar cycle was supposed to max out in 2012, the end of the world, all that stuff. But of course, it didn't happen. And I was one of the first ones to announce back in probably 2010, I was already saying that, no, this solar cycle will not end in 2012. It's got to go much farther beyond. So we're already midway between 2013 and 2014. And now the official word is that we've turned the corner and are starting to drop down into the next solar minimum. So the solar cycle has been very weak. They're saying the weakest in 50 years, but I would say they're trying to slight it because, NASA came out and they've been pumping this idea, and I said it's a false flag in the making, where they want to use a solar flare to take down the electric grid. And they really don't have the oomph. They don't have the real backing scientifically. They never did. So I start calling it for what it was, a false flag event in the making, where they wanted to use a solar flare, just an average solar flare, and say, oh, that caused the grid to go down. And then with all the pre-initial hype from NASA, they could have justified it, but now they're going to have a tough time because I've been reporting this. It's rather comical, and I've been reporting about this. SpaceWeather.com has been just throwing anything and everything up there. Every time there's the least little aurora up by the North Pole, which, by the way, is there all the time, the least little thing happens, the auroras are up there all the time. SpaceWeather.com would report them like it was the biggest thing since the invention of the telescope. But they really had nothing to report. So they were making all kinds of reports about amazing auroras every day. And now they're posting noctilucent lights, what they call noctilucent lights at the North Pole. But once again, something that is there all the time. It's nothing to write home about. They're just starting to report it like it's they got to have something to report. But the reality is that the solar cycle is the weakest in, really, as far as I can tell, in hundreds of years, not just 50 years. So they're minimizing that reporting also. But the hurricane season, we've got a couple tropical storms running out in the Atlantic right now, very weak. Probably won't amount to anything. And so this is just another inkling that the solar output of both the visible light that comes to us and creates some heating of the earth does not create our weather. But more importantly, the electrical part is very weak. And so that's going to cause, that'll be a factor this fall when Comet Ison passes near Mars in late September, early October, when it has that Mars encounter. So I'll be watching that, keeping track of all of that. And there seems to be a continual misinformation dribbling out from the standard scientific community about Comet Ison. And kind of hanging up there. There's really not a lot of reporting, not a lot of visual reporting. You would think by now the various outlets, including SpaceWeather.com, which normally post photos, would be posting all kinds of photos of Comet Ison. But it's kind of low in the news. I think they want to keep it kind of out of the news until November, when it passes by the sun, and that's when they want to start reporting it. But totally missing that early October passage with Mars. Just switching gears. The response that I've been getting regarding my new book, Water, has been very favorable. The Comets book came out just a few months ago, and when it did, I said I will be following it very quickly with another book. The Water book, which is only available in ebook format, it's a book that's been on my shelf for many, many years, and it could have taken many formats. But the ebook, it's kind of a basis for me to continue talking about this topic because it could have been 600 pages. with a tremendous amount of data, a lot of fun facts about water. But I decided that I did not want to do that. I wanted to concentrate on the real issues, because the real issues would have gotten lost in the fun facts. The real issues regarding water, that's what I wanted to concentrate on, and that's why, you know, today people don't have time to sit down and read a 600-page detailed book. They would lose sight of what the book was about. So at any rate, the book is, I believe, about 160 pages, but it gets right to the point. It gets right to the point of the issues with water today, and it provides me a basis for my ongoing shows dealing with the topic of water. And, of course, I'll be talking more about that tonight. Tonight I'll be talking about water independence and also how to reduce your personal footprint to zero. How can you reduce your personal footprint to zero? And that is with water, resources, and energy, not just water. It's a something that the whole world has to do. And already I'm getting feedback. I'm getting feedback from people all around the country who are dealing with local water regulatory boards, the Water Management Board, the Municipal Water Regulatory Commissions, etc. And all of these communities across the country are dealing with these issues right now of water distribution, of water waste management, of sewage treatment. Many of the systems in the country are aging, and they're trying to figure out what to do with these. The huge force coming in is that EPA study that I announced a couple weeks ago, that they're saying that $384 billion has to be invested in the United States water infrastructure in the next few years to keep it upgraded. But you see where that's going. In comes the World Bank, and with the loans, and guess who's going to own the water before this is over? The World Bank. So what we've got to do, or the municipalities that are smart, will opt out of all of this federally mandated regulation and just say, go away, we're not dealing with this, and deal with this in another way. The huge sewage system should have never, ever been put in. It's a terrible way to manage water and wastewater, but it's who knows why that was the route that was taken. But remember when, for example, streetcars were done away with. Many cities had streetcars, electric streetcars, a very efficient way to move people around. And so all that was done away with so that Detroit could make individual cars. Now we're totally dependent on the individual automobile to get people from point A to point B. Terribly inefficient, terribly expensive, and terribly costly to the environment, and a system that we're stuck with that is almost impossible to get out of. Other countries have very good public transportation where people don't have to own cars. I know people in foreign countries that don't own cars. They get around with public transportation. They don't have a parking problem. It costs them far less. The expense of having an individual automobile and running around or going to work every day, that cost is enormous, not only in terms of your expense, but in terms of the infrastructure expense to keep the roads up, all of the roads that we have to have to to accommodate all of the cars. And this, when it comes back to a sustainable society, we don't have one. We're not anywhere close. And this cannot go on forever. We cannot go on for millions. We cannot go on for decades into the future and hand this off to our kids. It just isn't going to work. It's breaking down. It's the road systems. I do a bit of traveling myself, and the road systems are in horrible, horrible condition. They're construction all over the country, and they're just struggling to maintain this road system instead of having decent public transportation where you can get to a place and know that you can get around instead of having automobiles. At any rate, that's just one issue. But as I talk about the reducing your personal footprint to zero, which I have done, by the way, for water, resources, and energy. It's possible to do today, but you can't live in the banker's world and do it. You have to get out of the banker's world. That's step one. Then step two is understanding what a sustainable lifestyle is. But the reason I started mentioning this is because I'm getting a very favorable response from people all over the country regarding my water book and the going into this topic, hitting the major issues. Now, these are issues that you're not going to see or hear anyplace else, because you have to understand who your enemy is. If you want to have a sustainable society, you don't just go out and build one, because there are major forces working against sustainable societies. They do not, in the banker model, the banker's world model of economy, you have to use a lot of resources. You have to be dependent. You have to have a 40-hour-a-week job to afford all those resources just to get to your job. And then you have to pay interest on your overpriced house and pay out in something that's hidden, an amortization schedule in which you think you have a 7 or a 4% loan or whatever, but really you have a 95% loan. You're paying 95% interest on your house, on your car. And so that's the banker world. It's a big lie with phony money. And then the government's doing the same. All of the governments are borrowing money at interest. And this is never the way it was meant to be. The whole concept of the American Revolution, and that's why I released my book on July 4th, the water book, because it's about getting rid of the banker world economy model, because it can't work. It's not a sustainable model. It has only one goal, and that is complete slavery of the population. Things like Obamacare, people think, you know, that's hailed by the the lower middle class, and the what you'd call the very poor people of the United States is hailed as a good thing because they get something for free. What they don't realize is if they ever crawl up into middle class, or if their kids ever get up to that point, they will be taxed out of existence. They cannot escape. They're bound into this system, and so your handout today is going to cost your kids tenfold tomorrow. It's not a good deal. So stop thinking it's a good deal. It's going to be very costly, and that's the best way to explain it to people. Look at your kids and then explain to them that your handout today is going to cost them 10 times that tomorrow, because it's all on a loan. It's all on a bank loan of phony money. Okay, there's just a couple quick announcements here before I get into this concept of water independence and zero footprint. On my show a number of weeks ago, I had noticed something I had never seen before. I said that the jet stream had reversed, and it did it for about a half of a day. So this was some very strange weather activity. And it reversed and went back to normal. And so I reported that on my show. And now I was not talking about the northern jet stream. Specifically, I was talking about all three jet streams, the northern jet stream and the equatorial jet stream. And I could see them reversing. And then they went back to their normal flow pattern. The northern jet stream flows east. The southern jet stream flows east. And the equatorial jet stream flows west. And, of course, that is something that's in my weather work. That's not something you're going to find in a standard textbook. So here's the point. Now, all of a sudden, the little copycat people out there that want to jump up and down and try and impress you are saying, ooh, the jet streams are reversing. So that's the new buzz term that people have learned. And they're saying, oh, every time something happens now, they're going, the jet stream is reversed, when, in fact, it hasn't. So I just want to warn people, you might hear that. You might hear that from people with no background that don't know what they're talking about. The northern jet stream and the southern jet stream are very snaky, and they will come down and they will swing and they'll actually flow westerly for a while as part of their normal pattern. So that's not a jet stream reversal. That's just their normal patterns, and they can loop around low pressure cells. They can actually flow south and west in the north, or north and west in the southern hemisphere, and then swing back east. And that's part of their normal patterns. That's not, I repeat, that is not a jet stream reversal. So at any rate, all the little copycats are running around out there saying that there are jet stream reversals when there are not. I just wanted to give you a heads up on that, because you may hear that, and they're, you know, being given by people that don't know what they're talking about and don't have any data to back it up. Here is a topic that we're going to actually have some fun with over the next year. Actually, this will start in 2014. There's a new show that's going to be on. Well, not new. It's going to be a remake of an old show. But remember the Cosmos series with Carl Sagan and his sidekick, his second wife, Anne Druyan. They are producing right now, putting together a new show, and with a lot of high-powered... well, a lot of money, let's put it that way. And this is going to be the new Cosmos series. They believe it's going to have a new kind of a thrust to it, talking about the future. But now, this is the way the generations of Tier 2 bad science are linking together to carry this far, far into the future. The Tier 2 garbage science that they pawn off on the public. There wasn't a better example of that. In fact, that was one of the basic origins of this, was Carl Sagan with the Cosmos series. Sagan, a lot of people don't understand, Sagan became famous for basically burying Velikovsky. He led the charge. He got together Stephen Jay Gould and a bunch of other big names from other branches of science to attack Velikovsky. Velikovsky was becoming tremendously successful worldwide. His books were selling. It was the best-selling book that Doubleday ever had. It was selling in 14 languages around the world, and people were reading it and believing it. So the standard scientific community was outraged, and they tried to do everything they could. They banned Macmillan, who was the original owner of the Velikovsky books, banned their textbooks. If you don't stop publishing this book, we will not buy your textbooks. So Macmillan basically was a textbook company. So they gave the book, they literally gave their best-selling book to Doubleday. Hugh O'Neill was a guy back that I've worked with a little bit back in the day. But his only job at Doubleday was managing the Velikovsky books. It's the only thing he did his entire career at Doubleday. Isn't that amazing? But so anyway, Carl Sagan comes along, leads the charge, organizes all of these scientists from various branches to give their rendition of why Velikovsky had to be wrong. The only trouble is that Sagan and his horde of scientific elite were wrong. They were wrong in everything they did. In fact, the chemicals were not even off the film of filming the Cosmos series, and already they were admitting that things like asteroids or things from outer space had drastic effects on the Earth. But they, until this day, everything that's done has a, gee, will Velikovsky be favored if this report comes out? They hide data, they smooze data, they destroy data. NASA has two news outlet release agencies that are in, one is at JPL, one's at Goddard, and they release any information. No scientist is allowed to go up to the podium or microphone and simply make a statement. It all has to be filtered. And they're afraid to death of this issue of Velikovsky becoming being shown to be right. So at any rate, Carl Sagan, because of his leading the holding the banner and leading the charge, his reward was getting the spokesperson for the Cosmos series. And I don't remember how many parts it was back in the day, but there were books that came out, and Ruyan was his right-hand woman that was assisting in writing and production, and now she's going to be, Carl Sagan, of course, is dead, but Ruyan is producing the new Cosmos series that is going to be shown, they say, in 2014. And so DeGrasse Tyson is the new spokesperson. He's kind of like the tier two schmooze guy, as this one listener calls the tool man of the elite. And so anyway, this is going to be the tier two hammer of science, just driving it down the throats of the public. Big buck production. Everybody is going to be watching this. But, of course, it'll give me a platform to show why everything they're doing is incorrect, why Tier 2 science, and then also you'll understand why they're doing this. But this new Cosmos series, I'll be talking more about that in the future. Just wanted to let you know that's coming down the line. But that also shows you the amount of effort, the amount of amazing effort that's being put into destroying real science and keeping the public stupid and promoting tier two, what I call fairy tale science for the public. And I'm sure it'll be just loaded with all kinds of gooey gumdrops, sweet little pieces of science for public consumption. Okay, I just wanted to mention the water filters. As I'm talking about water independence, you know, on my sales page, there's a little bit of, you might call this an advertisement, I don't know, but it really isn't. It's something that people need, is water filtration and personal water filtration at the place where you live. You cannot trust anybody out there to filter water. You buy bottled water, has a nice label on it, looks like, you know, Rocky Mountain spring water, or all kinds of labels to imply that. But it's just tap water, or water out of Lake Michigan or something that's stuck in a bottle and you drink it. No filtration, no cleansing, no purification at all. So at any rate, you have to be your own source, independent source of fresh, clean water. And a lot of people say, well, I have one of the inline water filters. That's good as long as the water's flowing and there's electricity to create the pumps that pump the water up into the water tower or into the water lines. But as soon as that's done, you're going to be out of water. So you have to be, gravity is the only way to filter water in an emergency. There's no tubes, no electric. But I just want to let you know that I put on my sales page a while ago packages of 10 ceramic filters. You can buy all of the filter replacement filters for the gravity feed water filters in packs of 10 now. So I won't say any more about that. But you might want to stock up. That's something that I believe you should do for the future. Remember that preparation is the same, whether it's a man-made emergency, whether it's an emergency from a physical event. For some people say, how do you prepare for Planet X? All preparation is the same. You need clean water. You need food. You need to be able to take care of yourself. You need to be able to defend your things from people who want to take it away from you because you planned and they didn't, on and on and on. So just direct you to my sales page, jmccsci.com, and that helps support this show also, this commercial-free show. Okay, talking about water independence. To be water independent, that means you don't depend on anybody else for water. You don't depend on the water line from the city. I just visited some people. This was very interesting. And the guy had a many acre kind of little mini estate, beautiful house, all his equipment there. He worked out of his own shop that was on his property. Everything was really wonderful. And then he said he had a backup generator and everything. If there was trouble, he was set to go. And he said he had natural gas running his generator. So that was better than having to haul gasoline, etc., for the generator. And I said, but wait a minute, your natural gas comes in on the line. Yeah, but it's in, and he didn't understand. I said it three times. He still didn't understand that he's not independent, because as soon as that gas line shuts down, as soon as there's no more electric pumps to pump the natural gas or to move the natural gas, and all of the switches and all of the equipment that goes with it runs off electricity, as soon as that shuts down, he doesn't have any way to run his backup generator. You see, people don't understand, because they've never really had an emergency. If you depend on anybody else for your water, for your energy, for anything else, then you're not independent. You're dependent, and that one critical link could be the thing that shuts your whole operation down. This guy also had a well, a really nice well, and I was very impressed. No need to filter that water. It was so pure. It was amazingly, it came from a deep well, which was great. But there again, if you don't have electric, how do you get the water up? Well, you don't, from a deep well. You can't hand pump from a deep well. So you need electricity, you need motors. But there again, his electric backup depended on natural gas, which came in on a line from outside. Everything was dependent on that one tube of natural gas continuing to flow. And when that thing shut down, his whole operation, including water, was out of commission. So at any rate, I just want to mention to you, independence means that. That means that you don't depend on anybody or anything or any infrastructure. You don't have to get in your car and go down to the gas station. And people make these assumptions because they're so used to the getting in the car and running down, getting some more gas. How many people out there have generators that they've got 5 gallons of gas stored for? Well, that's going to be gone the first day. But do you want to be storing, hundreds and hundreds of gallons of gasoline? Well, no. There are other options. But, and you shouldn't even depend on gasoline. I had a friend that got rid of all of his electric appliances and tools, and only started using hand tools for all of his work, for repair work, for everything around the house. Everything was done by hand. And it's amazing how many things you have which run off that electric cord. There are a lot of people selling electric water purifiers that they say are good for an emergency. Well, no, as soon as that electric power goes off, you don't have anything. You don't have any water. The only type of filters that are emergency or good for an emergency are the gravity water filters. And also, they're very lightweight. You can dump the water out, put it under your arm. They collapse, and you can take it in your suitcase. You can quick grab it, put it in your car if you have to go someplace, so you always have your own fresh water. The other thing, I have a very well thought out line of water products. People buy water bottles, plastic water bottles. That is like drinking poison. If you buy from the cooler in the convenience store or whatever, or at the, if you go and buy these in bulk, bottled water, those thin little plastic water bottles are terrible. The chemicals leach out of those, and it's known to be carcinogenic. But the companies keep putting that out, that thin plastic is not recyclable. So it just creates a gigantic garbage problem. It's one of the most horrible inventions of modern man. Yet people think, oh, I'm drinking pure water. You know, water's good for you. I'm drinking water out of these plastic bottles. It's the worst thing you can do for yourself and the environment. It's not water independence. When I was investigating, I've investigated many flood scenarios over my years and years of dealing with water issues. And what's the first thing that happened? You call the state commission on disasters, and they're set up with a command center. And I say, you need to get water filters into these people. Oh, well, we're sending bottled water. Well, first of all, how do you get it to the people? And as soon as you, is if you can get it to the people, as soon as they drink it, now what do they do with the bottle? Oh, they throw it into the flood water. That's really great. So you've got millions of bottles of plastic bottles being thrown into the floodwaters that wash down the river and eventually end up polluting the water with the chemicals that are leaching out of these bottles. And when the sun hits these bottles, the chemicals leach out more. I forget who it was, a famous movie star, a woman. She couldn't understand why she was young, she was healthy, exercised, and drank a lot of bottled water. That's something that was constantly drinking water. She found out that she got cancer from drinking the bottled water and went on a campaign to try and stop it. Well, just think, somebody with that type of notoriety, certainly much more than me, is trying to create public awareness against the use of those thin-walled plastic bottles of water because of the carcinogens, the chemicals in that bottle. When you leave it in your car and the sunlight hits it, it causes the chemicals to leach out very quickly. Also, they found out that if you leave them in a cooler, cold causes the chemicals to leach out very quickly. So what do? You have this refrigerated bottled water, and it's causing the chemicals in that plastic to leach out much, much faster. Just an example, on my webpage, I have plastic water filters. The housings are plastic, but they're made of high-density polyethylene food-grade plastic that over years and years and years, there's nothing that's going to leach out of those into your water and cause some kind of a toxic problem. These have been tested. It's a material that has been tested. And by the way, I've heard some ads. I don't even know who the company is advertising this. But people are saying that their filter elements last up to 10 years, that they have independent tests that have been done on their filter elements. The filter elements that I sell are being tested continually by the NSF. It's the National Standard for testing products like water filters. The ones I sell are continually being tested. And so if somebody tries to tell you that they have independent tests, it doesn't mean anything because they have to test the filters that they're actually selling. And so there's some very strict standards. So there's a lot of slip-slide going on in the water filter industry, people making all kinds of claims that are really, all you can say is they're slip-slide or that they will last 10 years. No filter is going to last more than 6 months practically. You have to replace them about every 6 months. That includes the domes, the ceramic filters, and the add-on fluoride filters. And by the way, I just wanted to make a note too. I now have the ceramic 7-inch candles that contain the fluoride arsenic filtration within them. And so that's a new item on the market for people that don't like that little extra can down there. Maybe they're having trouble because of the viscosity of their water, that it doesn't filter properly. This is for those people. It costs a bit more. But dollar for dollar, it's about the same cost. There's no real cost saving over having the older system with the candle and the add-on arsenic fluoride filter, which I, by the way, I still use myself. But There is a new item on my webpage that's the 7-inch candle. It contains within the 7-inch candle the arsenic and fluoride filtration. And it's really, in that case, it's not filtration. It's really a chemical grab is what's going on. The chemical in there will grab arsenic and fluoride chemicals and pull them out of the solution in the water. It's not really a filter per se, because the arsenic and the fluoride are in solution. And so there's a chemical process where they grab those and pull them out of solution and thusly filtering them. Okay, back to the concept of water independence. To be water independent, this is what I always tell people. Take a weekend with your family, unplug the electric, turn off the water main, all of the gas, the propane gas or the natural gas to your house. Go without all of those for a weekend. You have to do this as a drill. You have to get so you can be independent. Now, the situation with entire cities being dependent on water systems and sewage, as I said before, I stressed this last week, they take sewage, which is solid and liquid waste, human waste, mix it with more water, and then mix it with shower water, the water from your sink, or from your washing dishes, clothes, showers, etc., whatever you do in the house. If you take a drink of water and throw a little extra down the drain, that is clean water, but as soon as it gets into the sewer system, it's polluted because they're mixing all these waters together. If you can get to the point where you're water independent, it also means the treatment of water allows you to be independent of the city sewage system, etc. And then some people think, well, I have a drain field connected to the house. That's one step better, but you're still mixing all of that water together. All of your water goes out into that drain field. If you only had to deal with water from the toilet, your drain field would be about a tenth the size that it is. But you're pumping all of that water out into a holding tank that goes and then down into the drain field. So it's a system that is really designed to pollute more water, a lot more water than you need. There are systems out there that will clean up what they call gray water. That's the laundry water, that's your shower, that's your dish water. Okay, and so you could clean those up and reuse that water, like to water your garden, to water plants, etc. But a lot of people use harsh chemically infiltrated soaps and detergents, and that you really don't want to pour on your plants. There are soaps out there that are biodegradable. They're vegetable-based, and they really work a lot better for cleaning your clothes, for maintaining your lifestyle, for showering. They're all facets of cleaning, and these are, they're vegetable-based, biodegradable soaps. And you don't use very much of it at all. It's amazing how little you need to really clean. But there again, in a banker's world, you have to have large quantities of soap for people to use, and then they buy that and pour it down the drain, and then they got to buy more. It's very simple. In a sustainable society model, you use only the water you need. You don't mix human waste or other pollutants with your water, and then that water can go back out into the real world very quickly, and the soaps, etc., break down. Also, I've mentioned that meat byproducts, fat from meat, all of that that's in cleaning up of dishes, all of that should be treated like garbage, not like something that should go down your drain, because it doesn't break down easily in water. Any vegetable or fruit residue will break down easily, and so that can go down the drain with the water, with what you call gray water. So just as a quick summary, if you showered with vegetable soaps, you're eating primarily a vegetable diet, vegetable and fruits, which is the healthiest diet. A lot of people don't realize that after you're 50, if you eat a heavy meat diet, it's going to take 10, 20 years off your life. Not to mention the chemicals, the harsh chemicals and antibiotics, etc., that are in meat. So vegetables, almost pure vegetable diet, and with fruit and the nuts, legumes, you know, is a really good diet as you get older. And then drinking a lot of water. But you don't want to drink water that's poisonous. A lot of people, like the movie star that was always drinking bottled water, she thought she was doing something healthy for her body when really she ended up with cancer from drinking the water from plastic water bottles. It's a horrible thing to do to your system. So to be water independent is not only independent on procuring water, but what you're doing with that water after you're done with it. I also said that I personally use a dry toilet. It's a toilet that doesn't have any water in it. And when 6 months go by, you take a little tray out of the bottom and it's all biodegradable. You can put it on your garden for fertilizer. You can't do that if you mix your solid and liquid waste in water and then flush it into a system. It becomes very toxic at that point. And all the water with it becomes very toxic. A lot of people have problems with their drain field. If they have a private drain field and their own sewage system, they have eventually problems with that. They have to have their tank pumped regularly, not because of the sewage water that's pure sewage water, but because of all of the other water that gets put into there from the showers, from washing clothes, etc. So water independence does not simply mean getting water. It's what you do with the water afterwards. And so let's go back to my statement of becoming zero footprint for water, resources, and energy. Okay, so if you, here's something that has been lost. Back in World War II, there were what were called the victory gardens. Everybody had to have a garden. Because the war years, transportation was limited, you had to get your food locally. So the people developed gardens. That's all been lost. It's all been done away with. People don't even know how to plant a seed anymore, how to harvest seeds. Everything they think they have to go to the store to buy seeds. I went to a seed store one time, and I went in and I said, "Where are your non-GMO seeds?" The guy looked at me like I was out of my mind. He didn't know what I was talking about. He said, "Well, our seed racks are over there." And I said, "Yeah, but they're all hybrid." I said, "I don't want hybrid seeds." And this is the guy, the manager of a big seed store, garden store, you know, that you would go to buy plants or plants for your yard or all varieties of plants or seeds, etc. This was the seed and garden store, a big one. And this guy had no clue what I was talking about. He just pointed and said, "Well, that's our seeds over there." In little teeny packages. So it's not set up for the person who really wants to become independent. Luckily, there are more and more suppliers of seeds out there where you can get real non-GMO seeds in quantity, but if they're in real quantity, they're harder and harder to find. But here's the point. If you have the majority of your food that you grow yourself, if you have everything where you are that you don't need to go anyplace, if your water comes from your own independent source and your sewage is treated locally, okay, now you're getting to the point where you're a sustainable person. You can continue on that, doing that for years and years without depending on other aspects of society. You don't depend on facilities coming in like infrastructure, like electric, gas, water, telephone, etc. Okay, now you're getting the idea of zero footprint. And everything that you get done with, if you're, for example, your food, once you eat your food, the byproducts go off into composting and then go back into the garden. As far as energy, you don't have to go anyplace to get the essentials for living. Now, this is a base level, and I don't know anybody that lives their entire life on that base level. And of course, I don't, for the aspects I have to do for my science work, for my radio show, etc. Then I will require more energy, more ability to, say, travel. Of course, I'm going to have to use energy and resources. But for your own personal existence, I have personally gotten to the point where I have zero footprint. I don't depend on other people. I don't need to go out and get anything. Everything I have is there, but that's the base level. Then you have the ability to go out and do other things. You have the ability to travel. But what you're going to find is you save a lot of money. But this is not the banker model. What they want to do is loan $384 billion to this country to make sure that you and your children's children will pay far into the future for all your resources, especially water. Everything depends on water. I forget the number of gallons that, say, like a potato that comes to you from a field. The number of gallons of water it takes to raise that potato, clean it, and then get it to you. Not to mention the energy. We are an energy hog society. Everything requires energy. A lot of your food comes from foreign countries. And a lot of the cost of that food is in transportation, just getting it to you. So these are extremely high costs. So the amount of energy that it takes to, say, get a head of lettuce to you, I forget how much it is, the number of gallons of gasoline or fuel, just to get one head of lettuce, what comes from Latin America, comes from Mexico, possibly some other Central American or South American country, to get that to you is extremely expensive. The end result is that the workers also are working at slave labor. Basically not making anything. So it's supporting a slave labor world in which the communities are kept in the dirt, so to speak. And this is to keep, remember back in the 50s, there was a show, Edward R. Murrow was a hard-hitting reporter, had a weekly radio or TV show. And he called it the Harvest of Shame. He was the first one to report on the migrant worker, farm workers in California. And the people had no idea what the conditions were like and the working conditions, or that these people basically lived a slave existence so that the people in the United States could have food on their table. Look that up sometime. It's called Harvest of Shame, Edward R. Murrow. I think his name was spelled M-O-R-R-O-W, Edward R. Murrow. And he had an evening weekly radio or television show, I should say. And that was one of his series he did, Harvest of Shame. But it's still going on today, and nothing has changed. And it looks like this will continue to go on into the distant future. So basically what's happened, the end result is that we live in a society that is not sustainable. There's no way to continue this process forever because of the amount of energy that it takes to deliver products. But this is the banker world. This is the world in which resources, tremendous amounts of resources, are required. This isn't necessary. It isn't the way things should be. It's the way it's set up for maximizing profit and control. They are now targeting the United States water supplies, and the way they're going to do that is by infrastructure repair. This is the same technique they've used in third world countries to garner the control of resources, of all kinds of natural resources. And it's being spearheaded by the EPA study that was released. And, of course, all the congressmen are going to read that. They're going to listen to it, and they're going to go, oh, well, we got to bite the bullet here. We got to invest in this and sign off on these bank loans. And they will all do it to the number, thinking that they're doing what's right for the people, and never having a clue that is selling the entire future generations down the tube for hundreds of years to come. So what could the United States do to become water independent? They would have to install the composting toilets, and there's many types of composting toilets, but get the human waste out of the sewage system. Stop the flow of human waste into sewage systems. Begin using biodegradable vegetable-based soaps and use them in with reservation. Stop pouring chemicals down into the sewage system. Stop using harsh chemicals for soaps, shampoos, cleaning, all of that which goes into the sewer system. Diverting rainwater away from the sewage systems. Any of those cities that use the sewage system for rainwater diversion, that has to stop. They have to find a different route to move their rainwater. It could be channels or canals that are dug. It could be other types of systems where the water goes down into underground tubes off to drainage areas. All of this could be done, but the cost of doing that is far less than trying to upgrade the sewage treatment plants to accommodate this vast amount of water that really doesn't belong there. It doesn't belong in pouring the polluted waters and mixing the polluted waters together with fresh water is absolutely insane. Okay, well, I'm out about time. I will be talking next week about many other topics, including electrical things, electrical issues that are being measured in our own Earth's atmosphere. I'll be talking more about water issues, and I'll be talking more about the upcoming comet issues that we're going to be seeing this fall. So remember the webpage, jmccsci.com. That's 7 letters. JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. And the new water book is there. There's 3 different ways to purchase that. That's all the information is on the webpage. Remember that this show is archived on the webpage as with many years past. I'm out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.